getting older. Cannot sleep, got random pain.
In some ways you're wiser, bolder, but you're sweating.
It's like rain.
Search for answers, getting colder. They can't fix it, can't explain.
Your anxiety will smolder.
You've become a sex withholder.
There's bursitis in your shoulder.
'Cause you're circling the drain. Circling the drain. Circling
the drain.
Circling, circling the drain.
Down the drain.
Hello, and welcome to the Circling the Drain podcast. I'm Ellie Dvorkin Dunn. I'm 45, and I know I'm in perimenopause because of my teeth. I'll say more about that later.
And I'm Julia Granacki. I'm 46, and I know that I'm in perimenopause because I have rage that I don't even know where it comes from. But tell me, Ellie, tell me about your teeth.
This isn't even really like... It's not a symptom of perimenopause. It's really just a way for me to tell a brief story.
Tell me, I can't wait.
Crooked teeth. I was supposed to get braces when I was younger. I didn't get them. They're not that bad, right? So they're like passable.
One your teeth look great. I can't.
It's fine. But, you know, I tried one of those. I'm legally bound to not say the name of the self-straightening company that I used because I did end up getting my money back, and you have to like sign a non-disclosure because people aren't allowed to know that you can get your money back if it doesn't work. The point is, this is a lot of words about. For years, my dentist has been saying, this one tooth, this one like really crooked, like, don't you want to do something about that? And he's in perimenopause and he has brain fog. He's the same age as us because I see him every 6 months, and he should remember that I saw an actual orthodontist that he referred me to who was like, look, we'd have to put a button on this tooth. It would take 18 to 24 months to turn that tooth. Then you'd have to do basically, it would be a process of many years. My whole point is, I said, this comes under the umbrella of acceptance of where we are in life, right?
Yeah.
My dentist, this last visit, he said, so have you given any more thought to Invisalign? Like, are we going to straighten that tooth? And I was like, no, don't you remember? We talked about this whole thing. And you know what? I'm 45 and these are my teeth.
These are my teeth.
And he looked at me and he nodded his head and he said, these are your teeth. Like he was under a spell of like, what's the word? He was like hypnotized. I was like, these are my teeth. And he said, these are your teeth.
Ellie, you said something so radical to him.
You're right.
That it caught him off guard because it was so obvious once you said it that he was like, I'm going to shut the fuck up right now.
I'm 45. Look, whatever anyone wants to do is fine. And I did try the cheaper self-straightening thing, and I did want them, but it didn't work. And now I'm not willing to invest the money and the years of having actual braces to make my teeth straighter because these are my teeth. And none of you have been walking around the world going, God, if only her teeth weren't so crazy. Like, they're my teeth.
Yeah. And they're also, they're not.
I got
high pitched.
Fine.
You did.
They are crooked and I got high pitched and it's fine.
I enjoy your range.
I have rage. And you have rage.
I have rage. But I just want to piggyback on what you said, like very quickly. I'm going to tell, like, I got to say, this is a PSA to our listeners. If you are thinking about trying any of these companies out there and you know what they are, we're not going to say what they are, but they're the ones where they're like, we're going to take a mold of your teeth. Then we're going to send you a kit and you're going to do
it
all. And it's going to be, do not do it. And I'm going to tell you why very quickly. I also did the same thing for a company I will not mention before I got married to straighten the one tooth. I also had a one tooth situation that no one would really notice that would do a thing. And it fucked up my entire bite. Like the way that my teeth come together is now fucked up.
Right.
And for me to fix it, I have to go to a real orthodontist. And I have had this conversation with my dentist, and that is where this is going. So you think you're saving money, and this is where you end up. You're going to have to spend more money to fix what the dumb people did to your mouth. So spend the fucking money and get it done right. It needs to be handled by a human being and not somebody on the phone with a mold. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Correct. People go to orthodontia school for years and go into debt and spend all kinds of money for a reason, because there's
a
bevy of knowledge that is important.
Yeah. I mean, you don't trust your OBGYN with like a mold of your vagina and do like a telemed.
I think you just invented a company.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's a great idea. No, it's a terrible idea, but rage. So I have rage that it catches me off guard. The rage is so strong. Like I will be at work. It will be a tiny thing that happens. And like, I can feel my blood boil in my body and it rises up like to my brain. I can see the smoke and steam coming out of my ears. And I'm like, I like Hulk out. I Hulk out like for real. And I never used to be this. I mean, I can listen. Ellie knows I can be like an angry person. I can like, I definitely like have a lot to say, like on, like if I'm pissed, you know, I got things.
Shorter fuse than some.
Yes. But this is like on a whole new level. It's like, I can't handle the stress or whatever's coming at me. I used to handle it better. And now.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah, please.
You were, I know you've stopped at this point, but you were taking some testosterone as part of your HRT.
What was that? Testosterone
as part of your HRT. Do you think you had like your version of roid rage?
No, and I'll tell you why. Okay. Because the testosterone that I have been on was so little, the amount was so small that my levels, like when I was testing, they still weren't at normal. Yeah. So I wasn't even I'm not passing normal because I wasn't even at normal.
But it was enough to give you like extra hair growth.
Hairy puss. Yeah. It gave me extra hair growth, but that's because you have to apply it to your skin.
Oh, okay.
So do you follow? So wherever you put testosterone on your skin, you're going to grow hair. Like
of course.
That. So if you put it on your arm, you're going to grow hair there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no, I don't think it's the testosterone. And also because this has been going on for like a while, like beyond like me taking testosterone. So I don't think, but it's a good question, Ellie. I don't think it's related, but yeah, like I can't handle stress the way that I used to. I just, many times, like last week, I just wanted to stand up at my desk and leave my job.
Yeah.
And just walk out and be like, bye, peace out, bitches. See you later. I'm done.
It's an outdated reference, but it reminds me of the movie Clue and Madeline Kahn having anger and going, flames coming out of the side of my face.
Absolutely. And I love that reference because I love that movie. It's classic.
It is classic.
Yeah.
So today's episode is very cancery. Cancerous? No. Cancer-centric. It's cancer-centric. Yes. But I don't want you to like tune out thinking it's going to be all pink ribbons and sadness. It is totally not.
Not at all. We have two guests who have been through two completely different types of cancer, and they are as irreverent about it as you would hope if you share our sense of snark, which I would think you do because you're listening to us right now.
Right. Now, that being said, I would like to revisit one of our favorite segments with some science related to what we're about to discuss. That's right. It's time for science, bitch.
Yeah.
I tried to say that rage.
I like it every time. Yeah. Every time we do it with the little, Ellie elected me to report today's science because it is going to be unpopular and she thinks I have a thicker skin than she does. And she's probably right. I think maybe. I don't know. We'll find. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. We're both kind of like zero fucks, but it's cool. I really don't. But here we go. We researched the most common cancers in women, and breast cancer came up as one of the top five listed right below skin cancer. We know a lot about the prevention of skin cancer, but when it comes to breast cancer, if genetics are not the leading contributor, what are the other risk factors? What can we avoid in order to try and prevent it? One of the main contributors listed was something that we're not sure is widely communicated. And here's the part that's going to piss you off. Are you ready? It's drinking alcohol.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I don't like it. We found a statistic that states an occasional beverage will not likely increase risk, but even one drink per day can increase risk of breast cancer by about 30%. And unfortunately, it is stated that alcohol is the third leading preventable cause of cancer behind tobacco and obesity. Do with this information what you will, as we are merely the messengers of science. And Ellie is my bitch.
Thanks, Julia. You took one for the team.
Oh, I'll get you back at some point. Now, tell us who we have on the pod today, Ellie.
Today, we have Nancy Elwood, a publisher of children's books and mother of two, and also Stephanie Kilroy, a director of sales in the tourism industry and mother of one. Both women are candid, captivating, and just a little bit cancery.
I can't wait to find out how they feel about you describing them that way. I think that's cancery.
A little bit cancery. There's only one way to find out. Stay tuned.
Nancy Elwood is a nonfiction book publisher at Arcadia Children's Books. She currently creates books that focus on the local history and culture and people from cities around the U.S. And her goal is to make them fun and interesting for kids of all ages. She is a wife and a mother of two kids of her own, ages 11 and 7. And as she so eloquently puts it, she's an ass cancer survivor. That's rectal cancer, in case you were curious which part of the ass, of the actual ass. To protect her ovaries from the radiation aspect of her treatment and to stave off early menopause, her doctors moved her ovaries, which she says seems to have worked, sort of. We are definitely curious to hear more about that. I am really, really, really curious
to hear
about what that means. Yeah, we're going to get there. But welcome to the pod, Nancy.
Well, thank you.
And Stephanie Kilroy has spent her entire professional life working in the hospitality industry. She has served as director of sales for many hotels throughout Pennsylvania and New Jersey, and she is currently a sales manager at the Valley Forge Tourism and Convention Board. She was a caregiver for her mother, who died of lung cancer, and she herself has had breast cancer. Due to the aggressive form she had, triple negative, and the history of her family, both sides have cancer, her medical team convinced her to remove her ovaries, which thrust her into medical menopause when she was 42. She is the mother of an 18-year-old daughter who is a college freshman, and she also happens to be my cousin and the only person alive who I regularly spend over an hour on the phone with. Sorry, Mom and Dad. Welcome, Steph.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
They would rather I talk to them, but I would rather I talk to you. I'm happy you're here too.
Well, let's have each of you introduce yourself with your name, your age, and a brief statement about where you are in your peri or menopausal journey. Nancy, why don't you start?
Well, my name is Nancy Elwood. I am 47 years old, very recently, and I'm positive I'm in peri, almost full menopause, because, well, we fried the ovaries that we moved. And my symptoms are that I'm having hot flashes like almost every hour these days, and it's driving me freaking crazy.
Great. Congratulations.
Yeah, lots of sweating.
Welcome to the club.
Woo! And Steph?
And hello, I'm Stephanie Kilroy, and I am 51. And I know that I am in menopause and finished menopause because I went through menopause twice. I have no ovaries. Chemo put me in menopause, and then the removal of the ovaries put me in it again.
Ugh. Double menopause.
Good times.
Double delightful
menopause. Yes.
What a joy. All right. So clearly we have made this a cancer-sode, but we chose both of you because you have an amazing sense of humor and are refreshingly candid about the nitty-gritty of it all. Many of our listeners' lives are affected by cancer, whether they themselves have it or they're watching a family member or friend go through it. And we know that the female hormone piece is often left out of the discussion entirely. So let's have each of you elaborate on some of what we just touched on earlier. Steph, why don't you start with what it was like to go through, well, I was going to say medically induced menopause, but menopause twice. Like, what was any of it like?
It was obviously hard and strange. The interesting thing about it when I look back is how no one talks about it and how it is just kind of like, well, yeah, you're going to go through medical menopause. So you might get some hot flashes. And it's like, okay. But then when it happens, it is so incredibly overwhelming. Obviously, you're going through chemo. That's has its own set of circumstances. And then all of a sudden you have hot flashes on top of the symptoms that you're getting from the chemo. And it's just like, yeah, this is kind of what happens. So the chemo put me in medical menopause. So I stopped getting my period. I started getting the vicious hot flashes. Oh, and by the way, they say it's extra worse when it's medically induced. I don't know if that's true or a myth, but I can attest that yes. And also, no, black cohosh does not work.
Thank you. Praise Jesus. Bless you. I'm glad we're on the same kickball squad. This makes me real happy.
So it doesn't work. And because of the nature of the cancer that I had, which is called triple negative, the hormone therapy is also not a thing for me. So that was that. And then the chemo stopped and I started getting my period again. So started having my period again. And then I can't remember the timeline. A couple months later, when they removed my ovaries, it thrust me into medical menopause again. So it was rough, but
Did you have...
Is that good enough story do you need more info?
Oh, no, yeah.
Did you have any symptoms other than hot flashes? Like when your period came back, was it... I feel like you told me it was heavier and worse than ever in your life.
I recall hemorrhaging. Yeah. Yes. Yes. It was rough.
What's that called?
Menorrhagia?
Menorrhagia.
Yeah.
Menorrhagia. Yeah.
Or menorrhagia. I don't know.
Menorrhagia.
Sounds like an Indian queen.
Sure. That's a nice way to think about
it. I like
her.
That. That's a way to think about it. Yeah. But we've called it, I've read and I have experienced and agree with this that it can be what you would call like a super soaker event. And I'll never forget that phrasing because that's really what it seems like when you do experience it, right? It's just like you're going through tampons and pads and you're like, what the heck? So you were having like these super soaker events and then did it just like taper off and go away?
Well, I got the ovaries out. So
right. The
ovaries out took care of the period. So
it
was just over.
Obviously.
It was just over. And then kind of thrust into an aggressive symptoms of menopause, like times 10.
Yeah.
Just because it wasn't a natural, this is what I was told. It wasn't a natural, similarly to sometimes if you have a C-section versus having a natural birth, sometimes you have symptoms attached that you wouldn't have had you had the natural birth. So I kind of likened it to that because it wasn't a natural process. The symptoms I was told were going to be worse.
Right. Because you weren't easing,
no easing
into it as a woman would naturally, like your hormones naturally just decrease. And that was not the case. They were just like, bye-bye ovaries.
It's hard to kind of pinpoint where the menopause started and the recovery of chemo and cancer ended. And it sort of is a big blur.
That's a lot.
It's a lot, yeah.
It's a lot.
Damn, I'm a badass bitch.
You are a badass bitch.
Hell yeah.
You also, when I told you I was doing this podcast, you wanted to make sure that we had voices that were postmenopausal who talked about how much better life is once you're on the other side. And we have since had an interview, a panel episode that aired with Amanda Baron who talked about that. But what do you want to tell us about what it's like for you on the other side of menopause? Because everybody's different, as we know.
Yeah, it's fantastic. After the blur and the things and all the symptoms, a couple different things happens. I'm single, so there's a freedom that comes along with not worrying about getting pregnant anymore that you've never had before. I mean, I've never had before. I was always, you either don't want to get pregnant or you do want to get pregnant, or pregnancy is always a big factor in your brain. So when that's removed, there's a freedom attached to that that is really fun.
Yeah.
It's just one less thing you have to think about or worry about. Mm-hmm. I always joke around with my friends that I'm fresh as a daisy every day, 24 hours. I joke around that there's the other side of that, which is obviously you're not as juicy maybe as you once were. Mm-hmm. I joke around that it's like a puff of smoke. But you can figure out that piece of it very easily.
Sure.
And I also don't sweat. Like I don't sweat. I'm not hot ever.
I look forward to that.
Yeah. So I'm in 90 degree weather and I am just fine. I actually really enjoy the heat and the humidity. My hair doesn't love it, but I love it. I feel like my skin is like soaking in the humidity. So I'm never hot. I do not sweat. I go to the gym. I work out really hard, barely sweat. And I am like, smell great, and I don't have hemorrhaging periods.
She does smell great.
And I'm not going to get pregnant. So
look at that.
Yeah. So I really recommend it.
Can I ask a question? How long, like after like the crippling, how long do the hot flashes last? I mean, I know it's like, it could be 2 months, it could be 35 years, but for you.
I definitely recall years, but my doctor put me on, I went on Effexor, which is an anti-anxiety drug. And I was told that the strange side effect of that was it helped with the hot flashes. And I remember I tried to be super healthy and super natural. And I was like, no, 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 no. And then one day I just called her and said, yes, yes, yes. I couldn't take it anymore. It was, my friends were peeling clothes off me. I couldn't function. So I started taking it and it really helped me a lot. And it calmed down the hot flashes to the point where I could function. And I don't really know, again, like where the drugs started and everything ended. But I want to say about 2 years for me until I got to the point where I weaned myself off of the Effexor. And I think that's what it's called.
I think you're right.
I think that's what it's
called. We'll find out and we'll put it in the show notes.
Okay, fact check that.
Yeah.
And then I just was able to just live without taking anything and without suffering from any side effects.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah.
Nancy, so we've gotten to where I want to be, which is I want to talk about this ovary situation and I want to know all the things. So we said in the intro that the doctors moved your ovaries.
Yes.
And I just want to say that, Ellie, when I read the script and you wrote this, I was like, I circled it. I was like, typo.
Uh-huh.
I was like, that's a typo. I was just like, what? Okay. So where did they move them? What is the science behind how this relocation staves off menopause and how is it working out for you now?
So I was diagnosed with ass cancer almost 2 years ago. It was in October. So it's almost 2 years ago to the day.
Wow.
Soon. Whatever. It's almost 2 years I was diagnosed. And I had heard that radiation is terrible and pelvic radiation because, yes, the tumor was in my rectum, just above my anus. We use all the proper terms. Anus equals butthole. Rectum is actually the last section of your large intestine that is a very integral part of how you poop. It's your holding tank. And it's a very smart holding tank. It knows what's a fart, what's a poop. It knows how to hold it. It lets you get to the bathroom. It's an important part of your body. So I was hell-bent on keeping mine and not frying it with radiation. So we started with chemo, which helped.
May I ask? I'm sorry, I just want to ask a quick question. So just so that we can understand what that means, keeping. So I'm assuming that the alternative would be a colostomy bag.
Not necessarily. The tumor, we called him Bob the butt tumor, was just far enough north of my anus that they could save the muscle to preserve my sphincter function.
Fantastic.
Right. So there was a chance if I got to surgery that I would wake up with a colostomy, but they didn't think so. And that is not what happened. I woke up with not a colostomy. But I really tried not to have radiation or have my rectum removed. But I had to have both. Bob was really tenacious, the little dick. Sorry, I'm cursing left
and
right.
You're allowed.
We just fucking say whatever you want.
A little explicit box and we move on.
Thank God, because I don't know how not to.
Neither do we.
And neither do we. My 7-year-old has picked up on that real well. I get phone calls every couple of weeks from a teacher, a camp counselor. Anyway, so when it was clear that I was going to have radiation, so we did chemo first. It shrunk Bob a little bit, not enough. Okay, radiation is next because I really didn't want the surgery. They said, well, one thing you're going to go into menopause. We're going to fry the shit out of your ovaries. They're dead. Immediate menopause. It's going to suck. Now, this is all men. I've loved all of my doctors. They've been wonderful. And I was at New York Presbyterian for chemo, and I went to Memorial Sloan Kettering for the surgery and the radiation. They all know each other. They all train together. But I figured two of the top hospitals in the country, I'll take them both. But they were all men. The nurses, who are the ones you really spend your time with, were all women. And at both hospitals were like, I mean, other freaking worldly. Like, these people are just cut from a different cloth. But I was like, okay, if we're going to fry the crap out of my ovaries, what happens? What does instant, or for me, it wouldn't be quite instant because they weren't removed. They were slowly killed, or they would be slowly killed. And then one of the doctors said, well, actually, for women who in their 20s who have not yet had babies, we do a procedure. It has a name. Oh, it's called an ovary transposition. That's what it's called. And they move them north. So I kept saying my ovaries were going to Boca. Because they were going north, I had to change it. So my ovaries went to Kellerman's up in the Catskills.
Kellerman's!
Okay. Right? So what they do is they said for a woman of 40, at this point I was 45, and I went and I met with this gynecologic oncologist at MSK who was clearly brilliant, kind of a dick. I kind of liked him. I don't know. He was a mixed bag. And he was someone who was like, yeah, you'll have menopause. It's fine. And then we'll just give you hormone replacement if it's bad. Have a good day. You know, hope to never see you again. They all said that, but in a good way, you know, like we don't.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But at 45, he had like a 40% success rate. And his sample size of patients was like 8. He's like, women over 40 don't do this. He's like, most people just accept the menopause. I'm like, I'm not accepting shit. Like, no. I'm fighting tooth and nail to preserve whatever I can. So he's like, yeah, sure. And if it fails, it fails. Good luck to you. But I figured it was worth it. And what they do is they remove your fallopian tubes. So I am now officially infertile. I basically had a tubal ligation. So they take out your fallopian tubes because they help anchor your ovaries where they live.
Right? Yeah. Yep.
So they cut those off and then they take your ovary and the main blood supply to that ovary and they just sort of stretch it as far as it'll go. And with little metal clips, they attach it to your abdominal wall.
Fascinating.
Wild.
Right?
They just like pull them and tuck them.
They went on safari. They just scooch them up.
They like binder clipped them elsewhere.
Basically.
Yeah, I have this picture of them like stapled to the inside.
Honestly,
of, like,
that is almost 100% what it is, Julia. Like they really, they just clip them up there. So when I have any kind of scan, which I now have every 6 months, they note the clips. They see these things. Like, do you have metal in your body? I don't really have to report it because they're so small.
Right.
They won't show up on like an airport. But if anybody asks, I love to tell them. I tell everybody everything.
Yes.
Much to my husband's chagrin. Like, I mean, please. So it was sort of fascinating. And I was like, all right, well, we might as well try it. And my favorite part of that surgery was I walk in the room and there were six or seven, all young women. And they were nurses, doctors, surgeons, scientists. They were all there to use. Da Vinci was the name of the robot. It was all laparoscopic. And it was a Da Vinci machine, but they called her a she.
Why not?
The only dude in the room was my sort of jerk doctor, the main guy. But I was like high-fiving all the nurses. I'm like, yeah, girl power. It was really kind of awesome.
Yeah.
So we moved those. And then honestly, the day of the surgery, I wake up and I'm like bleeding more than I should. And the nurse is sort of concerned. And then I'm thinking back to myself, because during chemo, as Stephanie said, I was told chemo could kick me into menopause, which it didn't. It didn't impact. I had my period normally throughout chemo, which for me, chemo only lasted about 18 weeks. So it wasn't a very long course. I got my period the day of my goddamn surgery. So that was sort of fine, except I couldn't use a tampon because I was just out of surgery. They're like, don't do that. You have to wear a pad. So I was pissed off about that. But it came with a bottle of like Oxy. So I was like, all right, trade off.
I'll do whatever you want. It's fine.
So that was in February. And then I didn't start radiation until March, but I had three or four normal periods. And it wasn't until I finished radiation. And then I didn't get a period for 8 months. And I figured, well, that's it. And the hot flashes started. And it was once or twice a day, almost always at like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. I always woke up super early, sweating my balls off. Never pajama worthy. I was never in a pool of sweat, which I was grateful for. But if I hate anything, like I hate being hot. I love winter. I love air conditioning. I don't like feeling hot and sweaty. I can't live south of the Mason-Dixon for many reasons, but the humidity is the main one. Having hot flashes is like an extra form of torture.
Yeah.
So they started happening and then I didn't notice they had gone away, but one day I got my period 8 months later because I figured I was in menopause. That was it. It didn't work.
Right.
And technically menopause is 10 months of no period, or at least 10 months of no period. So I wasn't quite in menopause yet, but it was almost there. And I got my period and then I thought back, I'm like, I haven't had hot flashes in like weeks and I couldn't place it. It was very vague to me. And then for the next, say, 5 months, I got maybe three periods. So they were irregular. They were not like crazy heavy. They were actually on the lighter side, totally manageable. And I was like, this is awesome. It worked. And then, I don't know, 2 months ago, I noticed the hot flashes again. I'm like, God damn it. So they're back. They're way more frequent than they were the first time I had them. And really, they come in these waves and they're driving me fucking crazy.
And have you had your period?
No. I haven't had my period. I'm probably 2 to 3 months in.
Okay.
And it's funny because when I was getting the weird, very light periods, I was thinking, I'm pretty sure I'm on about a year-long death spiral. Like, I think I'm done. Yeah. And it's like the last gasp of whatever's left of
the
my
ovaries.
Shriveled up ovaries. And honestly, the jerk guy, he wasn't a jerk. I'm being mean, but he was kind of a jerk.
Some doctors have no bedside manner, but yeah, they're terrific doctors. And
right,
it's also that stereotypical, like, brilliant, cocky, I don't have time for charm. Here's the facts, but I'm going to do an amazing job personality. It's not my favorite, but you appreciate it when it's life-saving, right?
Correct. Right. And I have to say, my radiation oncologist at MSK was much more charming and much more fun. But he kept saying things like, I didn't need, like, there's vaginal implications to pelvic radiation. And they give you this, I'm sorry, I'm getting off topic, but they give you a dilator, which is basically a dildo, but it's hard plastic. And it's what they give to trans patients who have created a vagina want to slowly over time open it. So you get a set of, like, it starts as like a pencil and then it goes up to basically a nice cock. And they're like, go ahead and get yourself a dilator because menopause will do this to you and radiation will certainly hasten it. There's scar tissue and there is the thinning of the wall of your vagina and everything gets dry and brittle and it can seal itself shut.
I didn't know this. This is comes in the
Well, menopause is the dryness and the fragility. Right. The sealing itself shut is a radiation thing. That's radiation damage.
That sounds like some kind of weird, like, horror movie.
Yeah, but it falls under the umbrella shit nobody talks about related to cancer treatment. This is why.
And there are women who have, I can't remember what it's called. It's like lichen sclerosis or it's a lichen something like sclerotic tissue separate from any of these diseases, but that impact your mucous membranes, including your vagina. And like, I know actually two women who have suffered from where basically their vagina sealed itself shut and the doctors were like, we don't know what's wrong with you. But radiation will cause that. So they suggested I get a hospital dilator. And then one of the nurses pulled me aside. She said, don't. They're hard plastic. They're terrible. Go buy yourself a entry-level, boring silicone dildo. Normal size, but they're more pliant. They're softer. Just go get it. Put it in the shower. Diddle yourself every day. You're golden.
Love nurses.
And honestly, that's what I do. I have to do it because if I don't do it, after 2 or 3 days, sex will hurt. I'm happily married. We have an active sex life. He'll tell you it's not active enough. Whatever. I'm a mother of two. F off. And a working. Yes. And it's a pandemic. And
you know what? Cancer. You get what you get and you don't get upset.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
God,
but I love that you have to quote unquote dill yourself.
Yeah.
Every couple of days. This is good shit. This is what this podcast is about, right, Ellie? I'm glad we're doing this.
Right? Well, here's the real best part two things. First of all, I live in a small two bedroom apartment with my kids, but one bathroom. So at any time, anybody walks into the bathroom, there is no privacy.
Right.
So I'm always like, who's home? And the dildo's purple. And it sits on a shelf in our shower and we keep it. The kids have never seen it. It's hidden behind two big shampoo bottles. But if I don't leave it in the shower, I'll forget to do it. I will never remember to take it out of a drawer and bring it into the bathroom. So it has to live there.
In the same situation. Yeah.
But the shelf in our shower is actually a windowsill and that shower window is often open. And every now and then my husband will take a picture from street level because we're on the second floor of the window. And there you see it, like this big purple dildo.
Now, have you named it? Because you named the tumor Bob.
I name everything. I know he doesn't have
a name. Well, give him a name.
That's a problem.
I know it needs a name. I need suggestions.
You're going to have to let us know. You're going to think on that and let us know. But
Steph, we named yours was Lumpy, right?
I was thinking that too. Yeah, it was really.
Not her. You have her dildo, her tumor.
Her tumor.
No, not my dildo. My tumor.
Yeah, the dildo is definitely a radiation.
Also, naming a dildo Lumpy is not my favorite.
Yeah, my dildo's name is Platinum Pete.
Platinum Pete.
Platinum Pete.
Yes.
I didn't know this, and I talked to her on a regular basis. So now I just learned something. Yeah.
Mine is like a fuchsia purpley color. It's a nice color, and it's a very boring dildo. There's no special anything to it because it's a medical device to me. It's physical therapy.
But the fact that it lives.
You don't have to make excuses to us about you dilling yourself for whatever.
No, I know.
I'm all about, I'm like dilling.
Or the fabulousness or lack of fabulousness of the device.
Yeah.
Correct. It is. It's part of my daily life.
This should be a class at Kellerman's. We should go to Kellerman's.
Yes. Where my ovaries now live.
Yes. And like have instead of a dance class, we should have like this type of class.
Right? Like a your vaginal health and sexual pleasure.
Just like lube. It'll just be lube and dildos.
Yeah.
There you go. Of all different shapes and sizes and colors. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think the ovaries, and I think part of the reason that this was something else that the doctor told me was moving the ovaries at age 45, like they're already kind of on their way out. Like these are very delicate geriatric ovaries, which honestly he might've said.
Probably geriatric sounds right.
Right? I had two geriatric pregnancies.
We talk about this all the time.
We talk about it all the time. Everybody here that's been on the show, I swear, other than like
it's ridiculous.
The few of
advanced
us.
Advanced maternal age. They
have
did.
All had AMA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, but he said the actual process of moving them could basically kill them, which it didn't because they kicked back in. I think it's a combination of both the moving of them, clearly the radiation, because radiation scatters. So even though they were out of the direct line of fire, they definitely got hit.
Oh, sure.
Because they can't, I mean, they have to stay connected to their blood supply, so they can't go that far. But here's an interesting tidbit is that, you know, when you have your gynecologic exams and they get up there elbow deep to feel like the both sides of your ovary, mine are now out of reach. So my gynecologist said, what do I do? Because that's like a first line of defense to figure out if you've got any lumps or bumps in your ovaries that are not supposed to be there. And Jerk was like, you don't. He's like, and actually that's a terrible way to diagnose ovarian cancer. You know, he has very strong opinions. But I have the benefit of every 6 months getting my whole abdomen scanned.
Yeah, you just do a scan.
My abdomen, pelvis, and chest all get scanned. My next one's coming up in about 4 weeks, I think I go. 4 or 5 weeks. Because that's, you know, you got to check out the whole unit, see where things... Because Bob wasn't entirely contained. Bob had escaped a little bit into the lymph nodes. So it wasn't totally clear cut, but so far, so good. Knock wood.
Good.
Yeah. I'm glad you're here.
Me too. In all senses of the word.
Mm-hmm. That's what I mean.
It was interesting because it was so ass focused, but really like everything in the region has been impacted. So that's where the state of my ovaries, I think they are actually quite literally circling the drain.
And your hot flashes are the main concern and you haven't found anything that
they
helped.
Are. My lack of libido also bothers me. Mm. But I mean, quite frankly, that's many years old and has way more to do with stress and my life and a total lack of exercise, work-life balance, healthy habits. I say as I pick up my gimlet that I'm sipping during our podcast.
We do hear from our postmenopausal friends and family that the libido comes back with a vengeance. If it was there before, it tends to come back. Steph, would you agree?
I don't. Mine didn't really go away. So
she had a different experience.
And I also, I'm not that this has anything to do with it. I'm not married. So in other words, it's not always there and available. That might have a piece of the puzzle.
Right. And you're not carrying around the daily resentments of everything he's doing wrong.
No, right.
And yet
none
still
of that.
Wants to bone.
Right. None
so
of that.
So it's like, come on.
Exactly.
But I do feel like you telling me at some point that the horniness, you've been single for a long time, but that you've been in long-term relationships during that, you know, you're not being married, but you've been with people for a really long time. And there were times where you've definitely told me like, I'm horny as fuck.
Oh, definitely. And I think it goes back for me personally about the lack of ovaries and the lack of getting pregnant. Like the freedom I'm talking about was just like, it would allow me to sort of say to myself, I can do whatever, I can like do whatever I want. So that I think psychologically had something to do with it as well. Just not worrying about, I can't get pregnant, you know what I mean? So, and I think also the fact that there's not a husband, maybe, you know what I mean? Maybe it's different for you guys because it's not so, the thought of getting pregnant might not be such a big thing. I don't know.
It's a concern for me. I try to avoid it.
Right.
So. Getting pregnant.
Yeah,
she does.
Well, my husband got snipped a couple of years ago before cancer. He finally was like, because we have two kids. We were going to have one and we have two. And finally he's like, oh, well, maybe we just don't want that to happen again. And it wasn't total. I mean, we're not idiots, but I have high blood pressure. So I wasn't on the pill. I was using a diaphragm. I got really lazy with it because it's gross. I was like the last human being. I don't even think they will prescribe them anymore. I don't think anybody has a diaphragm.
I don't know.
Because they're gross. Have any of you ever used a diaphragm?
No. But I'm not good at putting things in and taking them out. So that would be a bad thing.
Well, and that's what you have to do. You have to time it. And then there's like, you got to fill it with spermicide. Yeah. It's all
foam or whatever. Oh, that sounds like a whole hell of a lot of work.
It's a whole thing.
And see, this is my point. If you take that element out.
Right.
Right.
Obviously, if
sex
someone has
is way more attractive.
You're just like ready to go whenever.
You're just like, yeah. Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. So he got snipped a few years ago. My daughter's 7 and maybe she was 2 when we cut that off, literally. But now I'm infertile to the point where when you have to have like an MRI and they ask you 17 different ways, could you possibly be pregnant and then make mm-hmm. you pee in a cup anyway? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I usually am like, I don't have fallopian tubes.
Right.
So the last time this happened, me and the nurse decided that I'm just going to start telling people I had a tubal ligation. Because basically that's what I did.
You did. So you might as well just say that and get it done.
Exactly. And then everybody save the money. And I might have to pee in my hand because nobody ever gets in the cup the first time. You always pee on your hand. Or maybe it's just me. I have bad aim, but.
I have great aim. I'm just going to say.
Do you? Oh, I always pee on my hand. Always.
I've told Ellie this. A shout out to this particular company called Vessel. They should sponsor us. So if you're listening, you should sponsor us. But I pee on the stick like every week and it tells me like where my cortisol levels are, where my vitamin levels are. And for me, I have to track this stuff for a lot of various reasons, but yeah, it works really well. And so I have a lot of, what I was trying to say is I have practiced
gotcha. Yeah.
peeing, aiming, and I've gotten really good at it. That's it. End of my story.
I think when I was pregnant, I got really good at it because I had high blood pressure. I was at the doctor all the time when I was pregnant. 2 pregnancies. So that's a lot of peeing in cups.
Yeah.
So I want to say I was probably better then.
I don't have good aim. I just take the cup, put it directly on the hole where the pee comes out.
Like against your
like
skin.
Up. Yeah. And then when the pee starts coming out, then I slowly pull the cup away a little bit so that the stream goes where it needs to go.
You have technique, Ellie.
I have technique.
Yeah. I was just going to say way better technique.
This should be a Kellerman's too. This could be the other class. That we all take them when we go
We
there.
Have like a whole...
There's a chalkboard schedule, right? 10 a.m.
We have dildos. We have a week of activities and workshops.
Steph, I remember you learning a lot about nutrition during your treatment and then subsequently changing both your eating and drinking habits over time. So what are some of the most important things you learned that you think that aging women should focus on regardless of their cancer status? This isn't like, if you have cancer, you should eat avocados, but like just generally what you learned about nutrition, what do you think are like your major takeaways?
And it's so boring because it's literally the same exact thing for everything. If you have cancer, if you're aging, if you're not, if you're regular, if you're 18, if you're 50, it doesn't matter. And it's the same story. It's protein, it's leafy greens, it's fruits and vegetables. It's not alcohol ages us, dehydrates us. It's basically, sorry, you're drinking a gimlet. I don't
Enjoy
want to
ruin gimlet.
Your gimlet.
She doesn't care.
Please. In moderation, of course. It comes down to moderation, and it also comes down to knowing what your body needs and what your body's asking for. And most people are dehydrated. Most people are not getting enough vegetables, leafy greens, all the stuff they tell you, avocados, grapefruit. And if you listen to your body, it will tell you what it needs. We tend to ignore it. We tend to decide I'm certainly not a perfect eater by any chance because I adore sweets and pastries and all of that stuff, but I just noticed when I don't eat properly, I don't feel well. And when I started really taking notes and figuring out exactly what it was very much diet related. So it's boring. It's the foods that are a little bit harder to prepare and no dairy, no sauces and all that kind of good stuff that we all love. The less you eat of it, it turns out.
Like eating clean, basically, right?
Eating clean.
You both have children who have seen you go through diagnosis and treatment. How do you handle their concerns and what do you think are the most important preventative habits to instill in them? Let's start with Nancy.
So when I was diagnosed, my daughter was in kindergarten and my son was in 4th grade. And it was a few months before the pandemic hit. So I finished chemo right before the pandemic, but I started radiation in March, like at lockdown. We had like quite a few whammies. And I have to say, I feel like cancer saved me from the pandemic and the pandemic saved me from cancer because there was like so much going on.
Yeah.
That it was like, you know what? I'm going to eat some ice cream and take a nap and everything's going to be okay. It was an interesting time. We're very open. Well, I'm very open, obviously. And I lost my dad to cancer, different cancer. He had melanoma. back in the 80s, and he died when I was just right before I turned 11. And so we watched him get very sick and slowly just deteriorate over about 10 months before he died. And the whole time we thought he had a stomach ulcer and that this was what happens when you have an ulcer. And it was my mom. And honestly, his melanoma, there was a mole on his shoulder. It metastasized to his intestines. So he was having gastro issues. So that's where my mom, like, you know, we knew he didn't feel good for a while. And I was like, you know, they're little, but I'm not going to lie. So we talked about, but my son is the one who named it Bob the Butt Tumor. But I said, I have this thing and we have to take care of it. I'm going to have to take very strong medicine. And some days I'm going to feel good. Some days I'm going to feel bad. We're just going to see how it goes. I might need surgery. I might lose my hair, which actually I didn't. My chemo treatment didn't. Well, I lost probably about 60% of my hair, but it fell out rather evenly. So while I noticed how thin and terrible it was, you really couldn't tell. I wore hats. It was cold. It was pandemic. Who left the house? So I got it right off easy that way. They believe my cancer was rather random. There is no history of colorectal cancers in my family. So they think mine was just a random mutation. And was it environmentally induced? Was it my diet? I do love bacon. I grew up eating cold cuts. Like, is it the processed meats? What is it? I do eat rather healthily. I don't exercise enough, but I'm not a total disaster of a physical specimen. So it was like, we couldn't really track it. So it's like, you know what? What we're doing with the kids is, God bless them. They love broccoli. They love string beans. Like, they have to eat something green every day. We try to keep fresh fruits and vegetables on hand. We make them move their lazy little computer addicted butts every day. And that's the best I think we can do that's normal.
Right.
And because we don't have a very specific genetic component. Like, they tell you that when you're diagnosed young, especially, but when you're diagnosed with cancer, the age of your diagnosis minus 10 years is when your children should get screened for that cancer. So I was diagnosed at 44. So at 34, they should get screened. They're going at 18 for their first colonoscopy. And my GI guy was like, that's a little aggressive. I'm like, fuck you. If they're my kids, they're going at 18.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, whatever you say, lady.
They offer teens colonoscopies at Kellerman's, I think.
It's absolutely. That's on Wednesday.
Yeah.
That's part of the camp program.
Wednesday is for colonoscopies. I have to say, in my journey, I actually ultimately did lose my rectum. I could not avoid that surgery. So I don't have a rectum. And I was told, when you wake up, you are just going to shit in your pants for the rest of your life. Like, the end product of losing your rectum is not really a good one, especially post-radiation. So there's already damaged tissue there. For some reason that is completely unexplainable and unpredictable, I'm actually doing extraordinarily well. I don't shit my pants.
It's great.
At least not frequently. And then post-surgery, I had an ileostomy bag. I did have a bag temporarily to let my large intestine heal. Mm-hmm. Her name was Phyllis.
But you haven't named the dildo. The bag got the name.
I haven't named the dildo. I still have my Metaport where they administered the chemo. That's going to come out in October after my next set of scans. I never named that one either. But yeah, Phyllis was amazing. Phyllis was a huge, that was crazy because you're basically like shitting liquid into a bag attached to your stomach.
Into a bag.
And it's your small intestines. It doesn't go through the large intestine. So it's very liquidy and it's just weird. It's totally weird.
But why isn't your libido through the roof? Just like, right? Like,
well, we did it during chemo. We did it during radiation. I would wrap a scarf around my waist so he didn't have to look at Phyllis because she was gross. She was
a shit bag.
A literal bag of shit attached to me.
And he fucked you anyway.
Oh, we fucked right through. We fucked through all of it.
I love it.
Good for you.
Good for you.
That makes me real happy.
Shit bag.
So, well, that's the thing is even with the low libido, the general idea here is like sex is always a good idea.
It is.
I want to hear from Stephanie on that as well, just about how do you handle concerns from your kids and like, what do you think, if there's anything preventative, which cancer, who knows, like especially, but how you handle it with your children
or child?
I actually don't know.
Yeah, I have one child.
One.
Yeah. Well, first I want to say that I definitely believe that trauma has something to do with having cancer. So, and I would like to recommend the book, The Body Keeps the Score. And I would also like to recommend a documentary called Heal, which kind of talks about trauma manifesting into disease. So
we will put that in the show notes.
The Body Keeps the Score has been recommended to me by many people, and I keep meaning to read it? Do you have it? Can you give it to me?
So the death of my father at age 10, yeah. You know, do you think that left a mark?
Yes, for sure.
Probably.
Ellie, yeah, I'll give it to you and you can read it and then you can explain it to me. It's a little over my head. Like I tried to read it. It was difficult. So I'm thrilled to give it to you and then you can give me the cliff notes. But wow. I skimmed through it and like the gist of it, I'm definitely,
you got.
It sounds like I read the
you
cliff notes.
You align with it.
I align with it. But, you know, for me, well, my daughter's in school studying nutrition. Oh. And so I would love to think that there's a part of the whole me being a little bit of a health, not a health freak, but looking into those healthy options rubbed off on her. I mean, I don't know if I can say that until she graduates with a nutrition degree, but she definitely understands when we eat better, we feel better. So I'll say that. She was 7 when everything was happening with me. And I was very lucky. I was surrounded by a lot of support and a lot of love. And like her whole Girl Scout troop did like a patch thing on my behalf. And she was a little famous. Her mother had breast cancer and she enjoyed the attention. She definitely enjoyed the attention. And when I was sick, I couldn't really do much. So we spent a lot of time watching TV, which isn't my normal type of thing. So like we watched every single episode of Glee and it was like a little older than she was at the time. But of course, I'm like, man, she's going to watch Glee. And we watched every single episode of The Wonder Years. So there's like,
oh, wow.
Moments and times, even though I was bald, even though it was scary, even though I was sick, were special and fun. And there was a lot of people who came to visit. So it's not a negative time. I sound like Mary Poppins, but it really wasn't. It was actually a really beautiful time. A lot of friends and family around me and people were bringing me food and it was actually like really warm and special other than the obvious. When my mother was sick, similar to what you're saying, Nancy, with the nurses were just, the nurses all around me my whole life are my heroes. But the hospice nurses told me, because at the time Phoebe was 5, and she said, don't hide the whole situation from your daughter. Make her part of it. Let her help. Let her be in the room. And I took that advice. And then when it was me, I took the same advice. So she was very knowledgeable about every step, everything that was happening, the good, the bad. And just like you, Nancy, it was just very honest and very blunt about what was happening. I told her, I'm not going to die. It's going to be ugly. This is what's going to happen. I'm not going to look good. It's going to be a little scary. I'm going to lose my hair. And I did. It worked out really well when it was time to write the college essays. So,
great.
You know, we used it. I don't know. I don't know if that answered the question or not.
It did.
Okay.
No, it was great.
Yeah. It did. Since a cancer diagnosis and treatment plan can upend a woman's life in 1,000 ways, what would you each tell women who are going through this? Just like basic.
I would say if there's one important thing that you could tell them, what would it be? One thing.
Who wants to go first?
Well, you know, there's a local mom who I'm friendly with here who's going through breast cancer treatment now. Her prognosis is excellent. She's doing very well, but she's like right in the middle of it. Her hair's gone. She still feels kind of like shit. She did a clinical trial that didn't quite work well enough. So now she's actually going through the traditional chemo. So she's having like double chemo and she's pissed. She's already had a single mastectomy. And she and I were texting today and she's like, I'm just having a low day. And she's like, that's not normal for me. And my advice to her on this day was like, what? She's like, I don't feel like me. I'm gone. I was like, we're in a, like the pandemic screws everything up too. But I said, what in the before times? So before cancer, before pandemic, what was a simple pleasure? She's got 2 little kids. There's just a lot going on. So a grand gesture is too much to take on, but did you have, like, after you dropped somebody at daycare, did you have a route that you walked home and a favorite coffee drink? Was there a thing that you enjoyed? A beverage, a manicure, 15 minutes to yourself, whatever it was, a ritual, something you did in the before times that you haven't really done in a while because of the pandemic and certainly now because of cancer. If there's something like that, go do it. It's very simple and it's very small and maybe it's fleeting. And maybe it just depresses you because you're not that person anymore, but it's worth a shot. That was my advice to her today.
That's really good advice.
Yeah, I think it's great advice.
Keep a positive attitude, which is really hard to do. Yeah. Like I joke top to bottom about every aspect of my diagnosis and treatment. And I mean, it was ass cancer.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
if you can't make a joke about that, then sorry, like you're in trouble. That is something I think I would tell someone.
I think that's great advice. What about you, Steph?
I love that. I think I would say you're the owner of yourself and you're the owner of your journey. And doctors are going to be telling you a lot of things and you have to make the ultimate decision of what's right for you. And you have to educate yourself and you have to know what's going on. It's very much you're a hamster on a wheel. I mean, it's like, now you got to do this doctor. Now you got to go to this and you got to have that scan. Then you're getting the port put in. Now you're having this. And if you just follow along, you might not know or think about things that are going to serve you. Like nobody talked to me about nutrition, never once. I had to take that upon myself to figure out, what am I supposed to be eating when I'm on this? Like, what doctors don't study nutrition as a lot of nutrition. So know what they're talking about and then make decisions for yourself. I mean, for me, I did everything. I did everything the doctors told me to do diligently, but I also did other things that made me, like, similar to what Nancy's saying, that made me feel good, you know, or made me happy, things, holistic type things that I thought also helped in the healing process.
We have reached the end of our episode, ladies. We have gotten to what we call the final four, which is a set of questions we ask every guest and every panelist on the pod. We're at question one. Are you guys ready?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm scared.
What do you wish you understood at 30 that you know now?
Oh, nobody gives a shit.
They don't. You're right.
Yeah.
They're only thinking about themselves.
Yeah.
And even at 30, like most people get that, like it's a 20s thing, but I was a slow learner.
Yeah. Nobody gives a shit.
Nobody gives a shit.
What about you, Steph?
Can I go with nobody gives a shit?
Sure.
Sure.
It's so true. It's never about you. It's never about you. And that's, I have to agree.
We keep relearning that lesson though.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Question two is, what do you have an abundance of?
Gratitude.
That's a great one.
I like it.
Now you have to come up with something different or else you're just a Nancy copier.
I can't. So gratitude, I don't know. It just, the word love came to my head. So I'm going to go with that.
It's a good thing to have an abundance of. I think.
Yeah.
Question number three, what part of your body are you most proud of and why?
Oh, this is good. I could be thoughtful, but really, I've got really good clavicle shoulder action.
Ooh. That's the first time we've had a clavs.
Right? And it's simply vain. This is vanity. Like, I am chubby. I've got giant boobs. My boobs are pretty good, too. But I have a good shoulder clavicle situation that I appreciate more and more as I get older and everything else falls apart.
Nice.
I like
That's
it.
Excellent.
I like a good clavicle.
I'm going to go the opposite of vanity. And I'm going to say my thighs. And I'm not saying that because I love the way they look, because I actually don't love my thighs. But I'm saying it because they're strong.
Yeah.
And I used to horseback ride, and you need strong thighs to horseback ride. And they really did me well. Like when I had my double mastectomy and had the transflap procedure, the thighs are what got me out of bed, and the strong legs continue to serve me well when other things start to fall apart. So thighs, fat and all, but thighs.
Oh, I like that.
That's
great. Final question. What single piece of advice would you give to the next generation of women to prepare them for the transitional changes to come?
I'm going to say it's going to be awesome, man. Like, it's going to rock. It's going to suck. But at the end of the rainbow, we're going to go to Kellerman's.
Yeah.
And we're going to, you know, we're going to have a good time. And you do get through it. And it's actually wonderful on the other side. You will. Obviously, some people go through rougher times than other people, but it's almost worth it.
Excellent.
I love that. So positive. I was going to say be patient, because that's what I have to tell myself, because I'm in the middle of it right now. I'm in the throes. And I know it's not permanent. And I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, let's see how the next few months go. My period could come back. It could not. So we'll see. But yeah, for me, it's reminding myself. So I would remind someone else that, like, just be patient and get through
it. This is not
fresh
forever.
As a daisy.
Fresh as a daisy.
Fresh
I think
as a
we've
daisy.
Named this episode, actually. I think that's going to be the name. Fresh as a daisy.
We have a final bonus question. We lie. I don't even know why we're trying to pretend like it's a surprise that we have a bonus question.
But they don't know what it is.
We have a bonus question. That's true. Flashing back to a chemo session or hospital visit that felt long and boring as fuck, if you could have had one celebrity to hang out with, who would it be and why?
Oh, yeah. Well, mine's so easy.
Go. What is it?
I mean, it's going to be Dave Matthews.
Yeah, I knew
and,
it was.
And I know that that might sound lame.
How much fun would he be during a long
I feel
chemo
like
session?
With his guitar, I hope.
Yes.
I smoked a lot of marijuana during my chemo. It was like my main go-to. And I feel like me
I
and-
smoked a lot of marijuana before this episode.
She did.
I'm down for that. And I feel like me and Dave would have had a really good time.
For sure.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's so good. A celebrity to come hang out with me in the hospital would have to be, I have like these weird fantasies of like being friends with celebrities, like neighborhood friends.
Yeah.
And they're so mundane. It's like if John Krasinski and Emily Blunt lived here, we'd have to be best friends, right?
Yeah.
Like they would be my, our kids, blah, blah, blah. So that's who I was going to say, like them. They would just come and hang out and chat with me. But actually, if I'm depressed and in the hospital and convalescing, I would want maybe somebody like Jimmy Fallon, who's just a delight.
Ooh,
right?
Yeah.
He's all positivity and goofiness and hilarity. So
in this imaginary world, why don't we all hang out together in the chemo with Dave and Jimmy and Emily and John Krasinski?
All Kellerman's.
At Kellerman's. That's the Friday night bonanza for our Kellerman's.
Jimmy's group. Hosting the karaoke contest, the whole thing. I'm into it.
And Platinum Pete. Platinum Pete has to be there.
Of course. And whatever, the purple dildo that has no name.
Oh that has no name.
I wanted to have a name for it by the end of this chat, but I just
Me too. I got nothing.
Just give me
Greg.
Greg is great. I think Greg is fantastic.
It should be a mundane
Greg. Greg lives in the on the windowsill. Greg
on the windowsill. Maybe it's I don't know a Greg, so that's probably a good thing.
Ladies, thank you again for being our panelists today. I could talk to you both for many more hours between seeing Nancy at the park and having my next phone chat with Steph. I'm sure I will. Many more hours.
Hey.
If you are considering being a tourist in the Philadelphia area where Stephanie works, or you're interested in the books that Nancy has been working on, please check our show notes for the links and many other links because there are so many links in this episode.
We love links.
I love you all.
We love you.
This was
great.
You. Thank you so much.
What a pleasure.
So I feel a responsibility to add that after we finished recording, Steph changed her answer to what do you have an abundance of? Her new answer is an abundance of curiosity. Oh. She asked me if we could re-record and I said no, but she's my cousin and I love her and I like to make her happy. So now I've given you her preferred answer. Anyway, we hope that listening today gave you a bit more knowledge about how battling cancer can also involve a battle with one's hormones, and that you will share that information with those in your life who might need to speak up about this aspect of their treatment.
With that, we want to give a shout out to Chick Mission. This group just came to our attention.
Yes, they are a wonderful organization that ensures that women diagnosed with cancer have the option to preserve fertility, aka freezing their eggs, through direct financial support, educational programs, and advocacy for legislative change. They are a great resource if you've been diagnosed with cancer and have concerns about your ability to have children.
And to help us maintain perspective, we will end with deep shit from a woke kid. If you'd like to submit a kernel of wisdom from any kid in your life, please email that to us at info@circlingthedrainpodcast.com. The soundbite should be no more than a minute.
But before we leave you with that, we want to thank Nancy and Steph for talking to us today.
You can learn more about their work and find some helpful science-y cancer links by visiting our show notes. And if you like what we're putting in your ears, please review, subscribe, like, and share. You can also support us at Patreon by clicking the support button on the episodes page of our website or by going to patreon.com/circlingthedrainpodcast.
This episode was produced by me, Ellie Dvorkin Dunn.
And me, Julia Granacki.
And now we will leave you with this week's deep shit from a woke kid provided by Nancy's daughter, Anna, age 7.
I'm Anna, and I am 7, and I think my grandma might have a superpower of super speed, super flight, or maybe super strength. But she already has super strength, because she has girl power.
We feel your pain.
You're not insane.
You haven't gone down.
You're just circling the drain.